Welcome to Women in WP,
a bi-monthly podcast about women who blog, design, develop, and more in the WordPress community. Welcome to Women in WP. I'm Amy Masson.
And I'm Tracy Epps.
And our guest today is Rian Rietveld, joining us from the Netherlands. Rian teaches, writes, and advocates for WordPress accessibility. Welcome, Rian.
Thank you.
And we'd like to start each episode by asking our guests to tell us about their journey into WordPress. How did you get started?
Well, way back when I was developing websites, I had my own CMS. And, well, people are asking, I want to change my password. I want to have that functionality. Maybe you can write this. And I thought, well, why reinvent the wheel for my own CMS? Instead, I should have a larger CMS already there with all the possibilities. So I went looking for a CMS, and first I tried PHP Nuke. That is something to avoid because that got hacked twice. And it's also like a paid solution. And there wasn't a development, so I was looking further, and I went looking into Drupal type of 3. I don't know if Drupal there was different kinds of CMS, and I looked into WordPress, and I liked the way it was set up, the separation of themes and plugins, and the core itself. And how easy you can write and add stuff. So in 2008, I think.
Nice. Old school.
Yeah, very old school. Notepad days. Yeah.
I love. So you wrote your own CMS. What inspired you to do that? Like, why did you have a lot of development stuff? Or?
Well, it's like a challenge, and you want to give the your customers the opportunity to post news items, to change the pages, to add images. I used FCK editor for that, and that works very well. And that gives the clients just the opportunity to do more themselves.
Yeah.
And it's also nice to build. It's like, well, yeah, let's try to do that.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
Yes. My mind's just blown here. I'm like, oh, I made my own CMS. What?
Well, it's just I love to code, and I love a challenge, and I learned PHP. And when my son was on swimming lessons, I had his book PHP 4, and I was reading that and trying stuff out. And that's really for me. Yeah, I love that. And if there's a question, I like to solve that. So
what did you call it?
The joy I've got out of work. Sorry?
What did you call it?
It was nameless.
Nameless. No.
It's a symbol. It looks like Prince.
No. Yeah.
And so what kind of things could somebody do if they were like your customer and they had access to their site through the CMS that you made?
Well, I actually, for each client, I rebuild it with extra functionality, what they wanted. I had just the core functionality was just posts and pages and upload images. And then for each customer, I added new functionality, what they wanted. Like for one customer, he wants to have an API with a spreadsheet somewhere with all the orders that need to get out and in, and a list of all the motorcycles they sold. I would just custom into that CMS for each client.
That is awesome. Yeah,
it's just it's just fun. It's just, and that is where I made my living. Yeah. So.
And do you still have sites on using that CMS?
One.
That are live?
There's one still live.
Awesome.
They called me like a year ago that the editor didn't work anymore, and I looked it up, and it still works in Firefox. So, but I think that's about 7-8 years old now, so maybe older. Yeah, some people just never change or never invest in a new website. So I think one is still running.
That is hilarious. I love it. I love it. You just you know, just add that. That's ridiculously impressive. So you're pretty well known in accessibility world. What was that transfer like, or when did you kind of really like focus on that? Because I know for me it was like there was like this time and I kind of like discovered it, and then I started really spending a lot of time into learning about accessibility. So when and what drove that?
Well, in the Netherlands in 2010, the legislation changed and all government sites needs to be accessible. And I thought, well, that's a huge market. And I really wanted to learn that. And I followed courses and I get myself certified for it with the Dutch Accessibility Association. And then the work came. A few government sites, but also the Eye Association, the Dutch Eye Association. And then I built a website in WordPress for them with the Genesis framework. And people who are blind wanted to use the CMS of WordPress. And they asked me, how can I do that? And I investigate that. How can a blind person use WordPress at the back end as a CMS? And well, there were some issues. And then I started opening issues and not getting really feedback. And then I said, well, let's step in myself. I discovered there was a accessibility team, and well, I joined that. And with the team, I could really, we could really make a difference, solve issues, address stuff, and that really helped. So it was a question from people, the Eye Association, that got stuck, that really got me into the accessibility team. The weird thing from accessibility is when I started as a business opportunity, but then you meet people that actually need accessibility, and then you say, the anger starts, like, what? Well, why can't I use that? And why are people not more helpful? So that started me on the journey in the accessibility team to get things started and to give talks and to advocate.
I love it. That's, it is really interesting, because when you, when I talk, I say, well, you know, we're all just temporarily abled. We can very easily we're one bad moment away from needing all of the accessibility tools that we kind of just
Starts sooner than you think. Like I'm getting older, my eyes are getting like seeing worse contrast.
Yeah.
So, and then I get really, really angry when you have a site that is light gray with white letters, and I just cannot read it. I'm not really having a really serious excess of a disability, but I'm just getting older, and that happens to all of us. So one day, all the young designers who really love this will see their work and say, "Oh, did I do that?"
Yeah. Yep. Pretty much.
I was reading your story on HeroPress, and one of the things that really struck me about your work with accessibility is how you learned what works and what doesn't work when you're working with developers. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, developers are really trying, but they just don't know what is important for accessibility. And if you say this is wrong, that is wrong, that is wrong, that needs to change, they really get angry. Like, why? Who are you telling me what to do wrong? I always did this, and why should I do it different? So if you approach it differently with explaining why, and this is the most important thing I learned, you have to explain why something is wrong and give an alternative on how to do it better. So that they are not in a corner like, I do everything wrong, but you help the developer. And I always see developers really want to learn, but they think it's difficult. And it is, because you have to look at your code a different way. Like, not your code doesn't work to people don't use the web the same as you do. They don't use a mouse. They don't use their eyes. They maybe cannot hear very well. So if you explain why and also how to fix it, then most developers are very open. And that's a lot of fun, but all the interns that get in our company level, they don't know anything about accessibility because it's not learned on schools in the Netherlands. And then they realize why and why it's needed. And then they become advocates for, and they make their final assignment about accessibility. They go to the school and talk about accessibility. That's really fun because then those young people see how important it is and how left out it is from the education and from the normal workflow from developers.
I agree, because I didn't, I was all self-taught on anything accessibility, and I'm now teaching some college, well, it's like a boot camp for marketers and UX people, and I even looked in the curriculum, and that even though it's, you know, much more relevant, there's still, they kind of breeze over the accessibility. And so because I am who I am, and I sneak it into everything. But for others, like how do you introduce that? How do you teach it? How do you get people on board? Like, what's your methods of bringing people along in that journey?
Well, first, awareness to show different ways people use the web. If you ask a developer, how does a blind person look at your website or navigate your website, they have no idea. So if you show them how a screen reader works, for example, then they have a better understanding about what is important, like make good link text or good heading structure, like that. So people don't know. So if you have to tell them, these are different ways people use the website. Some people use only a keyboard. And then it also becomes a challenge for those developers to really get it right. I think it starts with awareness and explaining how people use the web.
Because, yeah, I agree. Remember because I didn't have any access to any really good like screen readers, but I went on the internet on YouTube, and there were tons of people. I just searched for how do blind people use the web?
Yeah.
And people recorded themselves and explained all of these things. And I was like, this is amazing. So I told all my students, I was like, seriously, go Google this. People make these YouTube videos. You can actually watch people use the web.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
And also how much they can do. Mm-hmm. And another part, I think, is that writing decent code, HTML, is a lost skill. Everything is diffs and spans. So you have to explain why it's important to use semantic HTML. And that's more difficult. I think I struggle with that. To really explain why semantic HTML is so important, because that's the language of the web, and that's the language all the technology uses to understand the website, and that a div and a span with a lot of JavaScript on it doesn't work always for every device. And we have a beautiful language, HTML5. It's beautiful. You can do a lot. You can tell complete stories with it. And if you have a div and a span website, it's flat and meaningless. But that's much harder to explain than awareness, like people look to them.
Well, one of the things that luckily, because, you know, Google and all of the big names in like SEO and that and marketing are really starting to reward accessible sites and punish non-accessible sites. I can sell it as, okay, well, we need to do this way, because this will help with your Google search, because then Google can see that this is going to be something like package it in there.
Yeah, Yeah, it's a bit sneaky, like, but it works. Like everything you do for accessibility is good for SEO.
Exactly.
Because
yes.
Accessibility demands everything is in text. Important information is available in text, and Google reads text. So yeah,
it's a win-win.
It's a win-win. Yeah, and it's yeah, people spend a lot on conversion or SEO to get all people to the website. And if then 20% of the people drops out because they cannot use the website, there's 20% wasted money. So that's also like a calculation you can make for them.
So true. I like that. Yeah, that's so true. So for and you're talking about keeping up with accessibility code. What other than the HTML and CSS and not having everything being a JavaScript, but a site, what kind of methods do you use? Because I do like to, even when I do UX world work and I work with like engineering teams, I try to give them resources on, and okay, for this is for a big data application. Well, these are some of the things that we need to consider for accessibility reasons. What kind of are your go-to resources, or how do you keep up with some of the standards and any new tools or like things that are available to the development world?
Well, there's a huge website, ALI, is A11I dash project.
Oh, yes. I love that one.
I don't know any project. There's a huge resources. Maybe I can share the links later and you can put it on the...
Yeah, we'll definitely put that in the show notes for sure.
The ALI project. They are really documenting and giving a lot of resources. They're really expanding at the moment. You can guest write for them if you have good story to tell. Smashing Magazine has a lot of good resources too. DQ has a DQ University with a patent library a lot. I get a lot from Twitter actually. So I just read Twitter, and a lot of people I follow are really like Adrian Rosselli. He does excellent research on what works, what doesn't work, on recent CSS opportunities, and his blog is really worth following. This is what I use as resource. We recently launched ALI Collective. That's an online platform for accessibility courses, and I teach there if you want to learn more about accessibility, about code design, content. I give courses there. That's the ALI collective.com.
Spectacular. Yes. Yeah. I want to, especially when I'm teaching, like giving these resources, because that getting other people passionate about it, I feel like that's going to be the best way of getting that awareness out there and people actually, you know, improving sites, not because they have to, but because they want to.
Yeah. But mostly they start, most people start like they don't want to, but if they really get into it and they see the benefits of it, then they really get motivated.
Yeah. And I like to, I tell my students, I say, if you start off, like people, I see these corporations that they're like, oh, well, we don't have the budget for that. Well, you don't have the budget to not do that. And by starting off at the beginning with thinking about usability, accessibility, inclusivity, ethical design practices, all of these things, starting off with that, then you don't have to go and rework it and spend lots of millions of dollars in either lawsuits or reworks.
That's so true. And if you think, like in design, if you think about color, you can use inaccessible colors, but also accessible colors. Like there's no difference in work. it's the same work, just choose different colors. how much more money is that? So sometimes it's just making choices early on. And that is most cost effective if you just include it from the beginning.
Perfect.
I know when I talk to people, everybody, they think about, you know, by default, the blind user, when they think of accessibility, they think it's all blind people, but there's a whole host of different disabilities that could affect somebody's ability to use a website. What are some of the ones that are often overlooked that really we should be focusing more on?
Cognitive disability, like people with attention disorder. Like if you have a website with all kinds of moving stuff, ads that move around and things that are really chaotically grouped, that's for those people, and actually for all people, very hard to actually focus on the content itself if you want to read and everything is moving around. That's for people with attention disorder, really hard to read, actually for everyone. There are people that do not read very well. And then it's good to have clear language. Now, not everybody can read well. It is like we are all taught it on school, we can all read perfectly. That's not true. Some people are dyslexics, or some people just haven't learned to read. And then clear, simple language, if you want to really get a message through, is really important. Nobody ever said, your text is too easy to read. That's not my quote, but it's from Ashley Bishop. But I think that's really true. You cannot use simple, clear language to get a message through. It doesn't make you feel dumb because you actually can understand it. And it's really an art to have a text simple and really clear. That's also I wrote recently a blog post, Blind People Don't Visit My Website. And I did research on Twitter and on LinkedIn. I asked, if you do not have a disability, what are your greatest hurdles on the web? And then there was the cookie consent, the distraction, all the models that pop over, fonts that are not readable. And there was a whole list of annoyance for people that do not have a disability. And that's all those issues could be addressed by accessibility guidelines. So people without a disability also benefit from accessibility guidelines because for them also it makes the web way easier. So it's not just one focus on people with a disability, focus on a better experience for everyone, I think.
Yeah, so. I agree. I hate the fact that like accessibility and usability aren't really the same word because they are like you can't have something that's usable if it's not accessible.
Yeah, it's a different if you are depending on the keyboard or a screen reader, then it has to be accessible for your way of using the web. Mm-hmm. And then most people think about blind people, but there are also people like they're not that web savvy like older people. If you have a very complex form with a lot of choices, people like strand in choices and like what do I do if there's no clear call to action? That people really don't know how to proceed or what to fill out. That's usability and accessibility too.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things you talk about blind people, and so I always use this thing like, well, okay, I have full visibility, I am not colorblind, but what if I take my laptop outside and the glare of the sun, I can't see anything.
That's a classic one, yes.
Yeah, it's not even, it's situational even, so.
It's even with subtitles. People, I hear subtitles for blind people, that's not true. Most people that use subtitles are not deaf. For deaf people. I use them if I cannot follow the English very well. I'm not native English speaker. So for me, subtitles adds to the understanding of the English, for example. I can follow videos way better if they're subtitled, if they're captioned. Mm-hmm. And that also counts for if you're in the train and you forget your headset, or then it's also easy to have subtitles. But for people who are not natively in the language, it's also a big help. Or for people that don't understand it because someone is talking very fast, mm-hmm. then subtitles is also very helpful.
I also use, I have subtitles on my TV all the time. I have ADHD. And for me, having both of those, that helps me to pay attention to it. But I also saw, I see a ton of Gen Z that they all have the captions on always, and they'll just be on their phone and kind of like, so they can look up or what, like they, like almost everyone has captions on now.
Yeah, super useful.
Super useful, exactly.
Well, it's a lot of work to add them, but you've got specialized people who can do that quickly. And,
yeah.
Maybe, and the auto caption, like they are getting better and better.
Yep, I agree.
In English, other languages is moah, but in English they're getting better and better. But if you pronounce it well.
Yeah.
Google still consistently thinks I'm talking Dutch, even if I'm speaking English, as I the language is in English, so, and they listen to me and oh, that's Dutch, and then it's gibberish. So I think my accent is too heavy from Google to understand that I'm speaking in English. Yeah.
Well, hopefully those will all improve. You're right. Like so, Instagram, they have like auto captions, like. Google has auto captions, even Zoom now I think has auto captions, auto transcripts, and finally TikTok is just slowly like releasing their auto captions after all of us complaining. There's a whole group that pretty much just keeps their thumb on TikTok. It'll be like on accessibility and some of their diversity issues and their lack of transparency issues. So
you have something against TikTok.
Well, so that's a whole other episode because they're trying. The problem is that, and I see both sides of this. Being a user experience person and product and, you know, designing products, I understand that they want to be able to have control over the content so that they can, and I know that the intention is so that they can keep people safe. However, in practice, like in actual practice, it is suppression of, the minority and marginalized groups. And it's one of those things like, you know, Facebook, they're like, oh, we're going to do this real name thing because then it will stop bullying.
Yeah.
And then it posed all these other issues because that, but
it's right.
Exactly. I mean, it's a journey. It's a process, but
make one last thing over captions,
please.
Like, real handwritten captions are still better than auto captions. Mm-hmm. So if it's really important that someone listens of understands your content, please caption them yourself or by hand or by a specialist firm. Okay.
Do you have any go-to programs that you use?
For what?
For captioning.
I don't do that myself.
Okay.
I found one.
I found this program called Descript, I think.
Okay.
And it gives you like a couple hours for free. And it does the auto caption and then you go in and edit it. And it gives you you can export a file to either upload to YouTube or import into Adobe Premiere Pro to create all the captions. And it's amazing. So there are these tools out there and they're getting better and better. So I agree. I think everything should be captioned.
So what do you say to the designer or the client who comes to you and they want this, you know, cutting edge, you know, feature that kind of goes against accessibility guidelines, how do you talk them out of those, you know, things they're seeing other places that they think are so cool, but, you know, aren't cool for people with disabilities?
Well, I give them the choice. Are you building for making this for yourself or for your client? You have to focus on your client. Can your client use this? And if you like that yourself, that's okay. But you're not creating art. You're creating a design that will be used for a purpose. And the purpose is maybe to sell a project or to inform someone. So you have to go from the user and not from yourself. That said, it doesn't always work. And if the client really, really, really wants that, well, that's, and if you really put all your cards on the table, well, the client pays, so. But I always say go from the client, from the people who actually use the website, because that's what you're making your money from, or that's the one the people you want to inform.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, another argument is it's legally not allowed to do that. If it's a government website, you can say, okay, if you want this, that will violate accessibility legislation, so there will be consequences. In the US, you will get sued. In the Netherlands, you get a bad reputation.
So, yeah, so you could basically be like, well, then you're going to lose your funding.
Yeah. Well, or you cannot provide government anymore with your software.
Yeah.
But always go first for the real reasons, like you want people to use your product. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. That's
but if
awesome.
That doesn't work, the other stuff goes in.
I know. Well, not all of the stuff.
I definitely find it a more difficult conversation when working with the designer than the client, because, you know, if you've got a designer that isn't doing coding or isn't doing, you know, any of the building, and they're like, oh, but I see it here and here and it looks so great. And, you know, it's a conversation that I have that I would like to get better at.
Well, you're not alone. Designers have strong opinions about their work, and they should, because they're really passionate about their work. And then you have to tell them you're not creating art. If you're creating art, you shouldn't build create websites. A website are used. It's design that is used. It's not art, and that's something they need to understand, that they're not free in what to do. You see wonderful websites that are unusable, like with all kinds of effects. Maybe that's good if you are really emphasizing that you are creating art, but it's not like you're creating a website that will be used for a purpose. And that's the difference they need to understand. And I have these conversations too. Not in my company, but with other companies or reviews I do. And yeah, designers are passionate people.
Yes.
And art, and they created something they think is very beautiful. And then you say, you cannot do that.
You know, the designers that are doing design but not development, they are artists. And so that's when it's hard to get them to separate their art and their from their work for the client. But I love that you're not creating art. In their mind, they probably are.
Yeah.
And if you think about, I look at it this way, because like art, like a painting on a wall, people be like, oh, I get this feeling. And the art is, it's to evoke a feeling, and it'll be a different feeling for each person. You don't want a stop sign to give each person that sees it a different feeling. That would be dangerous. So it's more like engineering than it is art.
Yeah, but it can be beautiful.
Yeah,
it doesn't need accessibility. Are very ugly. That is, that's the extra challenge. You have to make something you think is very beautiful, but also accessible.
So I like that challenge. I think it's a fun challenge to be creative.
Yeah, well, you need to think maybe out of the box or maybe more longer about solutions. But well, if you were a true designer, I think that's a challenge, yeah. And that should be fun.
I think
so. Is it the English translation applied art? Is that a good word? Applied art? Maybe. Oh, well, okay. That's a translation directly from Dutch, but it's okay. Not art. Okay.
No, I think I know what you're talking about, but I'm also bad with words.
No idea. What's the translation?
I'm not an artist, so.
And me neither. I'm a really hardcore developer.
I love it.
If
do you
I
get to do
something? It's really awful.
Did you get to? Do you still get to do development?
Not as much as I like. So I started a like side project in my free time just to get some coding done because I really, really miss that. Yeah, I really miss just creating stuff in code and then making it work and learning new stuff. Like when you're not developing, you're also not studying really how to solve things. And by solving problems, you learn. And I kind of miss that. So I'm doing a bit of coding in my own time, but the rest is just studying about accessibility and teaching at the moment and reviewing other people's work.
Speaking of reviewing other people's work, so how has the WordPress itself been doing when it comes to the accessibility issues of past in your viewpoint?
I actually don't know very well. I left like 2.5 years ago at the accessibility team. Seems like ages. I took a time off from accessibility of WordPress itself because it was an intense time with the introduction of Gutenberg, and I thought, well, I needed to step down and then take care of my own personal health, and I thought, let it go. But now with the full site editor and all the new blogs being made, I think... I need to study what's going on the front end. I did a lot of work like on the back end, like on Gutenberg, how to make that accessible for that people could use that with the keyboard and the screen reader. I leave that alone now. I focus on the back end. I'm going to do on the front end, and I'm going to research that. I think full site editing is really something. We need to look into it. It's a really interesting development, and I want to see how that goes and how that will impact the front end. So that's something I want to look into, but I haven't done yet.
I agree. I have, you know, my my get off my lawn rants about some of the things. I see there are definitely improving some of these, some of the big kind of low hanging fruit, the easier issues, so I'm really hoping that things continue to improve before it goes to complete. Like the designer in me is a little scared on full site editing.
Well, I'm really curious how they will handle larger sites when you actually not supposed to change anything. I think it's just they throw it in the community now and in 5.8. So then go play with it, go see what. I'm really curious what comes out of that. I'm really not sure. But something has improved in the back end. It's like the color contrast of the team. Like it's more black and white. It's much more readable. I think that's a good improvement.
Yeah.
And if there was one plugin you would recommend people to put on the site to help with accessibility, what plugin would that be? Let me put you on the spot.
Okay. If you are creating forms, I would select Gravity Forms because that really got an accessibility overhaul lately. That's really a good plugin if you want to have forms. So that's the one plugin I would recommend if you have forms on your website.
So, all right. So I am currently working just like a couple hours a week on doing accessibility audit of a large website. And so what are your favorite tools to do that, to check on the accessibility? I've used like Wave. I've got a bunch of these other ones, but I'm sure there's more out there or sites that you would recommend to be able to really figure out where the problem pieces are of the websites.
Well, the main tool I use is my keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
Can I reach everything with a keyboard only? Can I open models, globe models, go to the keyboard focus? Is that logical? And the other one is X DevTools.
Yes.
Then on a page, you can generate a report of accessibility issues. And I really like that tool. It gives you the critical or serious, or you need to review this. That's a really good tool. I use Headings Map to check the heading structure of a website. And I use an add-on for landmarks that gives a landmarks structure of a website, if that makes sense.
Yep.
Well, mainly actually, and I read code. I just, in the inspector, I read code. If it's a link, or it's a button, or did I make set up? Is everything a div? Does it work with keyboard? So actually, keyboard and X, those two are actually my main go-to, and the inspector.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, X doesn't catch anything, and the keyboard doesn't catch anything. Doesn't catch everything, and the keyboard also, it's really something you actually need to test manually. But those two are really well catch a lot.
Yeah,
awesome.
I agree. So, like, one of the things I've used, so I've got a couple of the different ones, and I try them out, different ones. So some of the things, like in the accessibility guidelines or whatever, they're very strict. It says like, okay, well, the label needs to say what the text says, you know, that is the what is read to the screen reader needs to be the same. Yeah. And so it will absolutely catch anything that is not matching perfectly. However, one of the site is a large e-commerce site, and so they added extra context, since you don't have the whole, like, the visual of this is a big drop down menu, and I can see I'm looking at men's products, women's products, sale deals. So it's saying shop women's products, shop men's products in the label. So that's what's read by the screen reader. So it doesn't match the men, women deals on the site.
Well, there's if you use voice recognition software, you can target links by their name. And if the area label is different than actually what you can see, there's a mix-up, because the accessible name, well, actually what the name is of the link is what's in the area label. And then people with voice recognition software cannot target the link, because it doesn't say what they see. That's the reason why.
I see that.
Yeah. But if you start with the same words,
yep,
like men's clothes shop, these, or maybe do with something with the sentence that actually the words start right, that the first word, then they're easier. Well, something like that.
No, that yeah. makes a lot of sense. And yeah. I'm pretty sure, like, they have, you know, I'm pretty sure that they have that. But I double check now, because I want to make sure. But that makes a lot of sense. I didn't realize it's good.
Start of the sentence, make that the same.
Yep.
And, and sometimes, if you have like three reviews, you have five different opinions, It's accessibility is not a hard science. Sometimes some people have different opinions about how to solve stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, it's been wonderful having you with us today. Before we go, can you let our listeners know where they can find you online?
Yeah, the company I work for is Level Level, and the email is level-level.com, of the URL, level-level.com. And I'm teaching at the Ellie Collective, that's a11i-collective.com, so you can find the courses. You can find me on Twitter at Rian Rietveld. That's just my name, is my handle.
Great. Awesome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you
for having me.
Thanks for listening. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter, or join our Facebook group. We would be honored if you subscribe to the show. You can find us on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, and iTunes. Finally, if you want to be on the show or know someone who would, visit our website at womeninwp.com. Until next time.